Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just for my own house, we're going to talk guests every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions, call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talk Show website at www.talkshow.com, search for quality 17702, or search for SFU On Call or Starfleet Universe On Call. But if you want the best online experience, you need to go to twitch.tv. Yes, that is twitch.tv. twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you'll find us there. You'll be able to join the wonderful chat room and join us for this live live to tape, if you know what that means, podcast. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter while it still exists, and it's sfuoncall also. And my personal account is Franz Games. Sorry, it's Paul Franz, P-A-U-F-R-A-N-Z. And of course, lastly, but not leastly, is Franz Games, my business account. So if you want to follow me there, that is fine. I haven't been posting much. I rarely post anything, so except for usually SFU On Call, and I've been slacking on that. But moving onward, and this lovely TalkCast gets into a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week, and that is Federation Commander Gumbo's Attack is now available in PDF form only. The hard copy is still not available, and so it looks like it won't be available probably until next year. And, of course, the normal e-tailers for Starfleet Universe products are, of course, Warehouse 23. As you noticed, you know, they moved to Shopify as their platform. Also, when it comes to, you have the, of course, Wargame Vault and Drive-Thru RPG. So, also, ADB has announced that due to ship card and counters rising in cost, that the Federation Commander products will also, their costs, their prices will also increase in the future. They have not announced how much so, but given that Steve Cole, the Post was quoting that ship cards went up 10 times the amount and the counters went up 3 times the amount, I can imagine that it's going to go up quite a bit. Because I doubt that the cards that would cost them $1 a piece previously and then be $10 now. I my assumption is that it was like 10 cents before, and now it's $1. That kind of thing. That's cost that he's going to have to add onto the product because he can't sell FedCom anymore at the same price. The current price has been there since the year 2005. So it's been that way for almost 18 years. I'm not sure exactly when 2005, so it could be 17, it could be 18 years. So you get the picture. Well, moving on to the SFB Online tournament stuff. Sapphire Star 13 signups are still open. We have, to my knowledge, we have 11 people, and so we still need 5 more. Might be 12. I did not actually check the count. I relied on the Post, and they didn't have a post with the updated numbers, and I didn't have a chance to actually go to the email and check to see and count how many are there. So if you want to, please sign up. Those slots are disappearing really, really quickly. Moving on and forward to the online client stuff. This past week, I did add support for setting EW, both loaned EW and regular EW, you know, ECM and ECCM, for multiple units at one time. The idea being that you can do that for like fighters or whatever. I added into, if you use the squadron feature, that's part of the client. You can specify that these fighters are going to be part of this squadron. And after you do that, then you can control these the fighters of that squadron together. So it makes it easier, because that also is a way to modify just the EW for those fighters. I'm working on releasing the latest version of the product. I've got all of them done. I got the Unix version, that installer. I got the installer for Windows. That's done. The only one I have not gotten done is the Mac, because I had a problem notarizing it, because Apple being Apple, you have to notarize your product and make sure that it's okay, it checks all the boxes. And I ran into a problem where there is a shared library file, which needs to be a signed library file. So I got to see if I can possibly extract the file from the jar file, because that's where it's actually inside, like a zip file. And it needs to be, I think, extracted so I can sign it. I'm assuming that's what I'm going to have to do. And then I have to, and hopefully the application will still work after I do that. On the Mac, anyway. I don't, it's possible that one file is for the dark mode. So it might be that just dark mode is not available on the Mac. I want to get this thing out the door just so that, because I haven't released a new version for the past 2 years, and I really want to get another version with some of these updates that I have been working on, with some of the tweaks that I've been doing. The one thing I did not actually have as part of this release is changing the board settings to be a window versus an actual menu items, because I really want to reduce the number of menu items as much as possible to make it easier and simpler to use. That's the whole idea of that. Moving on forward to library reports, nothing when it comes to SAP libraries, but I've completed all of my work when it comes to the FedCom library. Every single ship that I have is now part of the library. Actually, not quite. There's a couple that I need to hold off because they're part of the gunboats, which Steve Cole said, do not release these before they release the product. Okay, no problem. I will hold them back. Now that the product's been released, actually, Chris Nuzzi has been so kind as to contact Steve Cole about this. And because he wants to know if we can get the cards in so we can convert them to be available online. And also from Steve Cole, when we're allowed to actually make them available for people to play online. I'm not sure when that's going to be. I hope it's sooner than later, but at the same time, I know that Steve Cole needs to make money on the product. The question obviously being is going to be, since at the moment it's completely an e-product, ebook product, there's no hard product. Does he want us to wait until after he got the hard product out, or maybe 2-3 months so to let people to buy the product on ebook form and then play it, and then he won't worry about people kind of stealing, because that's its big concern. We've got it so it trims down the cards to make it so it's pretty much useless as if you copy it and you print it out and try to use it as part of a game, it's pretty useless, because the things that aren't there are kind of important ones. Like, okay, how many Marines are there? What is the BPV of the ship? What's the damage control of the ship? Things like that are completely removed from the card as to make it so it's pretty useless to use without the actual the actual purchased product. So this lets you know about the numbers. I forgot to tell you about the numbers. Apologize for that. The squadron side ships are now at 635 ships, and the fleet size ships are at 525. at the moment, we don't have any of the beta tests. You know, I'm thinking about Omega. You know, like, there's no Omega chips. I would actually like to have those. I think that'd be kind of cool. But I'm not sure Steve Cole would actually allow us to do that. I might contact Steve Cole about that to see if it might be possible to have the ones that he's already put into the Omega product, you know, the playtest product that he's shipped, and any of the captain's log slash, I was going to say healing frequency, but that's not communiques. Any of the Omega ships that were in the, and see if I can have that posted. Because to me, I think it'd be a great benefit for so that people who want to play those ships can play them online and playtest. I think it'd be an excellent reason to allow it for playtesting on, you know, actually online, so more people can get at it and play it. So, with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the one and only Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, well, it's me. Got Jeff. Hey, Jeff.
Hello.
And Doug. How you doing, Doug?
Hey, I'm here. How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing good. Doing good. Oh, okay. I'm actually the myth. Oh, dang it. Excuse me. Kitty. No. Get down, please.
And the Man-Kazen wars continue.
Yeah, I know. I wish he would just cleanly just jump up on me, but no, he's climbing up, trying to climb up my leg, and that's not working out so good. But anyway, and I see Dave's actually here. I gotta talk to TalkShoe about that one. Looks like there's a minor issue with the chat room. That is, it doesn't tell you if who's here. You know, but if you're talking, yeah, it shows you. But if you're actually just participating, you're listening, but you're not going to be actually, you know, you don't have a mic or anything like that. You just want to listen. You know, they don't show you. It's like, I want to see those people too. Hello. But anyhow, moving onward and forward. Ah, yes, Chris is here. And just to let you know, Chris, I did record the news portion as a video, so we'll see how that whole thing goes with attaching it to the YouTube video that's outputted later tonight, and probably should be available sometime, I don't know, early tomorrow morning. But anyhow, the reason I've called you together this evening, dun dun dun, I heard about that. Chris is just mentioning about Star Trek Picard. I'm not sure if I talked on the podcast. I know I talked about it to the people here about my feeling about Star Trek Picard. I kind of liked the Star Trek Picard the first season. You know, it was nice to see the old people back, and I agree with the critics that said, you know, yeah, when it comes to Star Trek Picard, that, you know, the first season was, you know, it was good romping all the time seeing the old characters. Yeah, I agree. It didn't have the biggest plot. It was good. I thought it was overall a good story. Not great, but a good story. You know, season two, as soon as I found out that it was go back in time and you have to fix time, you know, Q comes and he messes up the timeline, and, you know, because he can. So
what again?
I know. So we go, so then so Picard goes to try to fix go, goes and fix it, tries to fix it all up and put it back the way it was supposed to. And which I've definitely I as soon as I saw that after the first episode, I went, nah. No, thank you. I will pass. Because
I mean, that's like trying to rewrite all good things.
agreed. Agreed. Yeah, because the big part, big issue, the biggest issue I always had with any show, story, or whatever that tries to do time travel, they do it poorly, in my mind. They don't make it realistic because, okay, when it comes to sci-fi is great. One thing great about sci-fi is that you have all these mechanisms, you have all these technology that you come up with. Time is not a technology. Time is time. How it works, and how if you modify things in the past, how that works, how that would happen is, if you think about it hard enough, in my mind, you have to come with only one solution. And that is what, oh jeez, I can't remember the show now. It's awful. Because I really like the way they did it. But
Time tunnel?
no, it was, it's going to see, forget. I'll probably remember later. But the way they handle time, what they, no, there was a TV show. They had like 4 or 5 seasons. I bought it completely through iTunes. So if I wanted to, I could actually look it up. If people really,
Was it a
not Quantum Leap, it
sounds
was,
a almost sounds a little bit like 7 days.
nope. Okay, guys, that's it. Since you guys are
And not time tunnel.
keep on guessing, I'm going to do TV shows, and it began with a C. Continuum, that was it.
Just to throw my 2 cents on time travel.
Yeah,
Sorry.
throwing 2 cents.
But usually when they go to time travel as a main plot theme, that's kind of like we jumped the shark and ran out of ideas kind of thing. And
Right, but
that's just my opinion.
I understood. Continuum is a little different because the whole show is premised on going back in time and then changing how history comes to be. But the one thing I always liked about Continuum was the way they treated time. And I think the whoever thought about it really thought well about it, and I think he got it right. Which is when you go back in time, no matter what, you're modifying time from the instant you go that you enter that timeline. You go back in your you can go back in your timeline to that point. Now, after you go there, now depending upon what you do there can be minor changes in the timeline, or there could be major disruptors in the timeline, major modifications to the timeline, i.e., for example, if you went back and somehow saved Hitler from dying, what would happen? Or more to a point, if you could actually convince Hitler so that Germany would actually won, they would have taken over like Europe, and that was now Germany. All of Germany was now considered all of Europe. What's current is Europe. That kind of thing. That'll be a major disruption in the timeline. Depending on, Doctor Who does it a little differently. It kind of, Doctor Who doesn't, talks about time in a way which is interesting, but the whole idea of it is that these aliens are placed into the timeline that aren't supposed to be there to begin with. They just and Doctor Who's trying to, defeat them and help them not, to disrupt what is supposed to be the normal time. Now, in my mind, Continuum's got it right in that, you know, as I said, you can have a minor disruption, like, oh, a relatively unimportant child dies, meaning a person who doesn't have any offspring, doesn't affect anyone, any person dramatically, you know, that could be a minor time disruption. So a minor branch on the timeline versus someone who is going to be like the parent, like like I said, in this case, I said the parent of Hitler. If the parent Hitler dies before Hitler is born, that's going to be a major disruption because of, at that point, you know, World War II doesn't occur. There's a lot of things that do not occur because of that, and that's going to be a major disruption to the timeline. Now, the one thing...
And the classic grandfather paradox.
Yeah.
Oh, time travel is just paradox left and right. So.
Oh, agreed there. Agreed. And the thing is, when they ended it, they brought it around, you know, everything was saved in the timeline. People, the bad guys were defeated, and they all went kind of, quote unquote, went back to the future. Now, the one thing that was at the very end of the show. So at the very end of the show, the person who she just wants to get back to see her family. Problem is when she goes back, it's no longer her family. It's another copy of hers family. Because she's from a different timeline. The two main characters of this whole story, they're waiting for this person. They're saying, oh, they kind of have a bet of whether, you know, it's kind of a side note that they say, oh, I didn't think you ever show up. You know, and he said, yeah, you know, and he said, you definitely would show up. And he shows up, and then she finds out that basically she can never go back to her family. And that's because of she's from a different timeline. So when she went forward, she didn't go forward to her timeline. She went forward to the way the timeline actually carried out because of the changes that occurred in their history. You know, in the now changed history. So, as I said, that to me, that is time done right when it comes to time travel. And overall, I hate going the whole go back in time. Now, in theory, the only safe traveling in time would be traveling in time forward, because that should be safe. The only thing that's be unsafe is if you die while you're, or something happens to you while you're in the future that you bring back to the past and affect, and then therefore you affect the past. So the only truly safe going forward is that you travel to the future and you stay there. That would be the safest of any time travel. So.
It is a deep well to try to draw story ideas from. Sadly, generally speaking, they don't try deep enough. They stay with the shallow.
Oh, agreed. So, but anyway, getting back to the Picard thing that Chris mentioned, which was basically that Star Trek Picard had a weapon, something like the Andromeda Tractor repulsor beam. I'd have to look at that and see whether that is the case because of it's one of the Omega empires that's I was talking to Barry about like 3 weeks ago or something, 3 weeks ago to a month, that we talked about, and basically the one thing that that one of the Omega Empires has is they have a, it's basically, it's a tractor repulsor beam, but it's not a weapon. It's a tractor beam that is designed to rapidly bring you forward or push you away. And you know, unlike, you know, a standard tractor beam, the idea is to hold you at a certain distance. Now, at the beginning of the turn, after you maintain...
Tractor rotation rules.
That you actually can move them. And I thought there was a rule that actually you can bring them closer.
Yeah, it has to do with the tractor rotation rules. The other option is when you're landing shuttlecraft, either a carrier, casual carrier, or even a ship with its own admin shuttles, you can accelerate the process by using a tractor beam, although you're not limited to just one hex per turn. You go a little bit faster based on the rules.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I did find out, well, this got posted in the chat, and this is why y'all, you know, when it comes to this podcast, come and join us on twitch.tv, SFU on call. You know, and that is this wonderful chat room. And one thing that is mentioned is actually, according to Chris, this week there was basically a displacement device was used. At least, so that's interesting to me because it makes you wonder, you know. And that is, if possibly, does possibly that the writers, or one of the writers, whoever came up with this plot device, has actually knows about Starfleet battles.
I wouldn't be surprised because of the vehemence which Paramount usually comes into play with if they try to do anything with an upgraded type of photon torpedo. Apparently, something in the past has triggered some nasty grams from Paramount's legal team over something that was perceived to be a quantum torpedo from the Next Gen era.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely makes me interested in possibly, maybe. Actually, I got...
I remember that, Chris. Sorry, I'm reading a comment on Twitch. Chris said that the ISC was rebranded as the Zendi during Star Trek Enterprise, the fourth season of Star Trek Enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Well, that season four, that makes sense because I never got past season one. Actually, no, I did the first time through. I tried to watch Star Trek Enterprise the second time through, and I'm sure you understand what happened. All of a sudden, you get involved in the time war. It's like, oh, really? Really? You're going to ruin Star Trek.
I wonder how much of that had to do with Scott Bakula being a Quantum Leap alum.
That's probably a lack of ideas on their part, actually.
Yeah, but
not that I would ever say anybody in Hollywood bankrupt on such things, but there it is.
Understood. Yeah, because the thing is, that's one of the things that runs through the whole season. I forget. I don't know if it gets. I think it gets concluded in season one. Which is, oh, okay, the temporal cold war only lasted until season two. You mean so I'd actually have to somehow, some way, trudge through two seasons of that? Ay.
And many people did not. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, it's like what's the I think, oh, crap. The last Star Trek.
Discovery.
Discovery, yeah. I thought it was Discovery, but from the moment there, I was confusing it with the precursor when you when it comes to Star Trek, Star Trek before James T. Kirk and all that.
I think
that.
You're thinking.
That's
Discovery. Captain Pike is the captain in Discovery.
Right. Oh, yeah. I like Discovery. Oh, what's the one before that? Oh, there was another Star Trek one.
You're not thinking Below Decks, the animated one, are you?
No, no. Hate it. There's another series. I started watching and I got through maybe two episodes and then it's like, no. What's that?
Oh, Chris yeah. has got it right. Strange New Worlds is the one with Pike. Discovery was the one before.
Right. I like the one with Pike. I do. Huh. They haven't got a new season that yet, have they? Or did they cancel it? Yeah, because I remember that one ended with the first officer being arrested for doing something bad. So, that one is interesting. I forget another one where it was actually it's after Next Generation. You know, it's in the future past that. I forget. But anyway, doesn't matter. It was another one I watched. I heard good things about it, and I watched two or three episodes, and I just could not watch it anymore. Just because I couldn't get into it. It was the issue. It wasn't that it was, didn't turn me off because of another time thing. Because it's whatever. That just drives me crazy. But anyway. Okay. Oh, okay. Discovery is finished. Chris says the Star Trek Discovery is finished. That would not surprise me. Right. Premiered 2017, 13. Okay. Oh, premiered on Access. The rest of the 15 first season was streamed weekly on All Access until February. Okay, the 14th episode second season was released on All Access in 2019. And 13 episode third season ran through the 21st. 13 episode fourth season was released to Paramount Plus November 21 to March 22nd, 2022. The 10 episode fifth season was ordered on January 22 and is expected to be released in 2024. Wow. Boy, I'm way behind on that one. I could have sworn it wasn't that long ago. It wasn't 2018. Yeah, that's what Wikipedia says. Wikipedia says that Star Trek Discovery, there's more coming. Gonna be new season. Season 5 is supposed to be in early of next year. Interesting. I didn't even know there was three other seasons, so I'll have to take a look see at that. But anyhow, geez, get to the topic that I wanted to talk about tonight, but I got sidetracked by Star Trek talk, which in most categories is not such a bad thing, though obviously there is a difference between Starfleet Universe Starfleet Universe and also Star Trek, because obviously the Starfleet Universe is based off the original series, and there are some things that were added to it by ADB, you know, adding things like the ISC. I was going to say the Tholians, but the Tholians were there, and same with the Gorns. Even though they both only had single episodes, if I recall correctly. Hydrans, they definitely they added the Hydrans. There's one, the Lyrans, the Zinti, when it comes to being the part of the original series. I know that the Zintis were part of the animated series. Do you guys know if, when they were part of the animated series, did they act, were they called Zins?
Yes.
Okay. I'm just wondering if they might have had a
problem. At the time they were still on good terms with the Niven, with Niven on that. It wasn't until later, after Niven passed away and other things happened, that they kind of lost the rights to keep using it.
Mm-hmm. Dang. Comes down to money, doesn't it? Comes down to freaking money.
That or somebody on the estate committee had an axe to grind for some perceived slight.
Or both.
Or both.
I don't know the history of that, so.
I don't either.
No, me neither. Me neither. And
yeah.
I was just curious, because I know that my understanding was that the Zinnies actually were part of the animated series. That is my understanding. I've never watched the animated series. I probably should.
Good.
That might actually be interesting, because obviously
there's only two seasons, and there's only like two dozen or so episodes altogether. I think 27, 28 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And they're only about half an hour each. They were written for the half hour Saturday morning cartoon spots.
Right.
There was an episode that had actual Kazen Kazinti, and there was a crew member that was of the race. Also,
yeah, it's worth watching.
Yeah, Dave brings up that the stasis box made an appearance in that, which where we. SFU guys get the plasma F freezer boxes, among other things.
Oh, okay. Okay. From up there, I was thinking it might be saying, talking about the stasis field generators. But
that might be a derivative technology, but this is actually a cargo storage box that got opened up. And the contents of the box were what was being fought over in the episode with the actual Kazinti.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, it's like the stuff from the Niven series. One of the things from, like, what was it, the Elders, the ancient race or something like that.
Holy cow.
But that's a whole other, you know, rabbit. And I think you wanted to talk about fighters tonight or something like
that. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I got sucked down this rabbit hole for a little bit longer than I had.
Here, let me put on my pirate hat and hijack your talk for a bit. No, go ahead. Fighters. Was it FedCom fighters you wanted to talk about, or was it SFB fighters, or both?
I say SFB fighters because of the FedCom fighters. Don't get me started on the FedCom fighters. The reason I say that is because I truly think that the FedCom fighters. I'm not sure if ADB will actually ever release them, but if they don't release them, I am just going to be, because as you guys know, I had to write up a tactics article on how to fight a scenario where basically one of the Klingons had a carrier. When we create our battle groups, and the Klingon, his battle group, he picked one with fighters. So he's picking a non-release product that I have to fight against. So it's like, oh, yeah, yeah, thank you very much. And overall,
does seem a little less than cricket.
Yeah. Well, you know, they you know, I forget the guy's name. I wanted to say Dale, but I don't think it was Dale. I think it was Dell. You know, he checked with Steve Patrick, make sure this is okay. Can I do this? And you know, it's valid, it's legal. Okay, use it. It's like, okay, fine. So I created my fleet with my Andromedans, and it's actually overall, I think that I chose well when it comes to my fleet because of the defensive wise. It's basically the same as the Cobra, and it's cheaper. Now, offensive wise, it doesn't have as much offensive punch, but because of the defense, it takes a lot more for him to beat up on. takes a lot more firepower to actually kill my squadron, because I have more defense overall. Obviously, that having not as much offense has an effect too, because that means it takes me longer to kill him, which might just offset that whole issue. But anyhow, SAB tactics, fighter tactics, because something I don't think I've ever talked about in any of my particular podcasts, which is using fighters when it comes to Starfleet battles. Obviously, there have been. I was going to say many, many tactical articles written about fighters, but obviously if you want to, you could just skip what I'm going to talk about and go pick up the SFB tactics manual, because they definitely talk about fighters in that. And of course, you can't have fighters without carriers. You can't have carriers in SFB, that is, without escorts. Because obviously, the biggest issue that fighters have is that they're fighters. And I remember one of those things that was mentioned in the tactics manual that I read the article. And one of the things that it was either the tactics manual or just a little tactics little blurb that it was included in one of the captain's logs. And that was that when you launch the fighters, you know, from the carriers, not from the escorts, but from the carriers themselves, you know, the escorts would appreciate it if you don't fly the fighters right through the escorts. Basically, the reason being to mention that was that if you bring your fighters, which are what? They take anywhere between like 10 to 15 points to kill. I mean, dead. If you fly them through the escorts, those escorts are going to die. Why? Because they're going to say, hey, if we explode, if we kill this escort, we can wipe out, or at least cripple all of these fighters in one shot. You know, and it's like the one thing that they mentioned was like their escort captains will appreciate it if you don't do that.
SNIDS. Sudden instant escort death syndrome.
Yeah. Yep. Which always makes me wonder about, because the whole thing about escorts, what escorts are supposed to do, at least overall, they're goal their goal is to protect the carriers. And in some cases, have it so that they also, escorts can also, you can land the fighters on the escorts also, which obviously would be good in combat, in a combat situation, if you want to be able to more quickly reload your fighters. And since, you know, escorts...
It only works for the drone races, though. It's been brought up time and time again that if you're going to use disruptor charges, photon charges, or any other kind of heavy weapon charge, escorts don't have the facilities to reload them. So it's one of those things that some races get better uses, or some empires get better uses out of than others. The downside to it is that the carrier and the escorts have to be spread out far enough that SNIDS isn't going to turn around and be devastating if you can bring it about. But at the same time, they have to keep their fields of fire overlapping so that they can perform their primary function, and that is to deal with the oncoming wave of drones, plasma, or other fighters that the other fellow's going to send at you first.
Right, right. Yeah, because that's what the escorts are they're designed to do. They're supposed to be there to protect the carriers, and against, as you just pointed out, all those kinds of attacks. Ooh.
I mean, it comes down to it. The carriers end up doing. Ouch.
Yeah, yeah. You read that too, Jeff?
Yeah, I just saw that. Yeah, I just saw that too.
Jeff, before you continue on, I need to read this to anyone who's not as part of the chat room, which is Dave mentioned that if six Rhino fighters let loose six Plasma Fs at the same ship, they don't need to reload. So it's like, yeah, good point. Continue.
It's a situation like that. I do believe the escort's suddenly going to have another shuttle box available for fighter work when the weasel is away.
Yeah.
If they've even got one.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the one.
That's evil, Dave. That's evil.
I like that.
Oh, agreed. You know, now, obviously, as you pointed out, now, with SFB, you know, if that happens to a person with a ship, assuming that the ship doesn't actually do an ED and then launch a weasel, yeah, that ship will no longer be there. At least it will be quite a bit damaged. Yes.
You could also outrun them, too. So.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's an option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but a broken formation is almost as much value as a destroyed escort.
I agree.
It's all circumstance.
Oh, yeah.
Totally understood. Totally understood. Yeah. And that's I agree. That's one of those things when it comes to fighters that is plasmas, if they get in close enough, and they launch those plasmas, they're going to be a bigger deterrent, a bigger source of mobile terrain than drones. Overall,
the downside to it is that once you've fired your first salvo, you're going to end up having to play the defensive a while you scavenge the power to reload all of the fighter boxes in your carrier's main trouble.
That's one thing I gotta read up on those rules, because it's been a while. Because if I recall correctly, and this has been it's many years, and you please correct me if I'm wrong. That is my understanding is that at the beginning of a scenario, if you're starting with weapon status 3, your boxes, you know, For reloading the fighters are already loaded. And so are the fighters. Yes. The fighters are already no. also no.
Only your alert. Only your alert five can have a full loadout. Everything else has everything in the racks ready to start loading.
Ah.
So it depends on what your alert force is. Now, some of the carriers have a larger alert force than others. I think most of the Hydran carriers are allowed to have Stinger charges on more of their fighters, or more of their Stingers armed at the beginning of a scenario under weapon status 3. But that gets down into the details. What it amounts to is that even if you're allowed to have the fighters armed, it's either you've got a charge in the weapon box or you have a charge on the fighter. You don't have both.
Understood. Ah, jeez. And I'll just start thinking about the feds. Good Lord knows. Feds and one of the most expensive shuttle in existence on the in SFB, the SWAC shuttle, which is
the AWACS.
Thank you. Nasty buggers.
Yeah, and they are fire magnets of the first order.
Yep. Which is why they're so darn expensive, and of course, if you launch one of those things, you better have something to protect it. Because, dang man, if I was anybody, I'd be targeting those suckers and just freaking blowing it up to high heaven.
They're about the only non-ship asset in the game that draws more fire than a multi-role shuttle.
True. Yeah, but the thing is, that's one thing that obviously you pointed out, and we have to remind ourselves of, which is the disparity between drone fighters and heavy weapon fighters. You know, whether it's I consider a Plasma F fighter is a heavy weapon fighter. You know, just like a disruptor fighter or photon, like an A-10.
I do believe that the Romulans do have some light fighters, so to speak, that use railed Plasma D cartridges that work similar to drones for purposes of reloading. But,
oh, yeah.
Aside from that, you're right. It's generally an either or across the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because usually the ones for the Romulans when it comes, or even the Gorns, I think mainly the Romulans, because the Gorns basically got the fighters from the Feds. Not exactly thrilled about that idea. But on the Romulans, their Plasma D fighters are basically superiority fighters. The idea is they will dogfight the other fighters.
As a matter of fact, the Plasma D is the Plasma Race's equivalent of the Type 6 dogfight drone, because it has a very similar weapons capability.
Yep. And that actually brings up a good question for you, Jeff, because I know Doug has never experienced this. But just have you ever played a scenario where the actual fighters got into a dogfight?
Excuse me. I have not. The only major engagement I ever got into that had any kind of fighters at all was kind of a nothing burger in the in the final analysis, we spent four turns putting almost 270 drones on the map headed towards the opposing force, and the opposing force just drug his heels and let time expire in the real world. Didn't know how to deal with it, so he just said, "We were looking at food, right? Can I get anybody another beer?"
Yeah,
actually, I think I did that in at Fort Hood when I was playing pretty actively.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's kind of a nothing burger. It's like, why bother?
Mm-hmm.
Like, in general, you're just better off using them against ships and reloading them.
Oh, understood. But you know, but as I pointed out, the rhyme is the plasma diesel. They're mainly are supposed to be there to defend against the heavy weapon fighters. Is the whole idea.
When the when if you can where the dogfight rules shine are when your fighters and their fighters cross paths.
Right.
You can tie them up. You can tie their fighters up in dogfights, or they can tie yours up in dogfights.
Mm-hmm.
Your superiority fighters can tie up their heavy fighters, forcing them to send more superiority fighters to help defend their heavy fighters. And you get these giant fur balls that basically work on the dogfight interface, which occurs every 8 impulses. Not to mention the fact that, yes, you can fire into a dogfight on fighters, but it causes negatives to your fighters, and it turns into a math black hole that most players don't really care to get into. And let's face it, when you've got fighters on the map, you probably, on both sides, you probably also have tons of seeking weapons, and that's a lot of administrivia, impulse to impulse.
Agreed. Which is
bomb them all.
Yeah. Which is
bomb the whole area. But yes, my escort exploded after dropping the T-bombs out there. Oh well, they're all gone now.
Oi. Agreed.
Oh, yes. These guys will know their own.
Yeah. That's when playing online, i.e. in electronic form, makes it a heck of a lot easier to deal with that many drones.
Yes, it does.
That's something I've never, ever tried with an online client at all. Maybe I'll try it one of these times just to see what it feels like, which is...
You know... Since you're talking about running experiments on the online client, you really ought to make it at least a game mode where one person can hot seat both sides and not have the system throw fits, so that you could game some of this out on your own just to see what a fighter could do against a similar force. Without another human being to bounce off of,
mm-hmm.
Like maybe have faction controls so you can say, okay, this Fed carrier and these fighters are faction A, and the Klingon carrier and those fighters are faction B, even though there's only one player in the room.
Right. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, allow some solo play like that.
Oh, agreed. The big thing is simplify solo play. Yeah, agreed. What was it? Dang it. I did something like that as part of the client. Because I thought I added an ability to color code the ships. Something along those lines.
You actually pull the client up twice and run it separately and use that to play against yourself.
I don't know how easy that would work, seeing as how you're still tied to the same login.
Right. You have to have two separate logins. I can have two separate logins because I'm the owner, so I can have two accounts.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just going to bring this up real quick.
Yes, yes. Go ahead. Keep grinning. We all know rank hath its privileges.
I'm sorry. I'm the owner.
It's your toy. You can play with it however you want.
Yes, I do. Okay. It's like that. And I could have sworn I can do this. And then piece info options. No. I thought there was. Of course, there's groups. I don't really think. Groups not what I want to add. I could have sworn I did something like that. Can't find it. At the moment, I can do. I can have a, right. Yeah, that's what I thought. And that will I have to have it covered. Yeah. Don't want to have it covered. Oh, that's it. I stripe color. That's it. So the ship can be you can add a stripe to certain ships. You can change, and that can define what group you're part of. That was the whole idea. Something like this, where I got. Go to options, go stripe color, and you can change the color that the stripe on the actual counter. And you can see it to be black, or black is a very bad one for black counters. You have, man, white's pretty bad too. How about magenta? You can click drag, yay! And you can blow it up, shrink it, yay! So, yeah, actually, I had one complaint that somebody actually prefers the scrolling to actually scroll up and down like this. I gotta understand that. But I got it so that you could, if you click on some place which is not a piece, it will actually drag the board. So, but anyhow, but so obviously, what you're thinking about, Jeff, is along the lines of separating it out so that. You can actually see the EAs are broken up into individual players, quote unquote. So it would be easier to handle in that case. You know.
Well, I was thinking like if you've got Squadron A and Squadron B, and if they're not necessarily tied to players when they start, you got, okay, Squadron A has their EA and their SSDs. Squadron B has their EAs and their SSDs. And if you end up only having one player running both squadrons, they're kept separate the way they need to be. But you don't have to end up building Squadron A with both sides of the fight. And then you turn around and have to do things like click off the Are You Sure boxes every time you want to fire weapons on your side.
I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.